Well, I have a question for all of us as we start this afternoon, and that is, what is the most mentioned name in the Bible? What name in the Bible is mentioned the most? Now, you might go through, well, maybe the three most righteous men. You got Noah, Daniel, and Job. Maybe they would be mentioned more than anybody else. Or you could mention, of course, Jesus Christ, and that would be probably a very good answer. The list I have actually doesn't talk about God the Father, but just from studies, Jesus Christ and his Father are mentioned about the same number of times in the Bible. So we could put two there. The third one I'm going to skip, or if you want to look at Jesus Christ being the first, we'll go to Moses as the is one with 800 down the line. You might have thought of him. Jacob, 363 times. And with some of this, there would be variations depending on the translation also. And also if they count the he's or the she's and not the actual name. But these are actually very, very close. Saul is mentioned 362 times. Aaron, 342. Abraham would have been one that would be on the top of your list, right? I would think. 200, almost 300 times. Solomon would be another one. He's way up there, almost 300. Joseph, another one. And I won't go down the rest except to mention maybe a New Testament guy named the Apostle Paul. He was 228 times. So what name do you think I'm missing? It is David. David. David is mentioned 971 times. You have Jesus Christ mentioned 1,281 times, and then you have David 971 times, followed by Moses 800. So you have David about 200 times mentioned more than Moses himself. Now, when we think of that, and you might ask, well, why in the world am I even mentioning that? And the reason is because the queen died. Queen Elizabeth, as we know, died the other day. It was not a shock, I guess, to us, because we knew that she was in failing health. In fact, I think the day before they showed a picture of her with 15 prime ministers, it was. Maybe that had been before, but somewhere in the last week, she had taken a picture with all the prime ministers who were still alive, who have served under her. And I think it was 15, starting with Winston Churchill. 80%, as we know, or as we maybe read about, of all Britons were not even alive when she started on the throne, when she became queen. 80%. So you can imagine she basically is the only one known, and she has a very good history. There was a short time when Diana died that they did not lower the flag to half-mast and then changed, but she was out of sorts for a short time. But overall, she's been very, very respected, even when the royal family itself has not been looked upon so well. In fact, I think her favorite son is Andrew, the one that has gotten some trouble. But we look at that because, and why David? Why do I say because the queen died? And it was sad. It was sad. I know Lynn Marshall was sent a note to us, and she saw the queen. I don't know how close she got, but she was there in the crowd and saw the queen when she was 10 years old. And that would have been when the queen would have been visiting, I'm sure, down in Australia. So it really hit, no doubt, the British. I know that the Canadian Prime Minister was crying when he talked about the Queen. In fact, he's not even going to change currency right away. When there's a death of the royalty, at least in England, you find that the picture will change from, in this case, Queen Elizabeth II to King Charles III. But Canada's not going to do it right away. Just, I don't know why, maybe the nostalgia there. And I do know also from what I read that King Charles III does not necessarily want so many nations in the Commonwealth. He wants to shorten the number. And then there are some nations that are saying, is this the time to get out? Under her as the head of state, or him in this case as the head of state. But we bring up David because we believe and know, actually, based on what we read in the Bible, that there's a certain throne that certain individuals have been sitting on for a long time. And that is the throne of David. The throne of David has been a covenant that God made with David and those who would follow after, that there would never be a descendant unavailable to sit on that throne. And we're going to actually, in the sermon today, go through the throne of David. So we take a look at this and we ask the question, why David? But we realize that in Jeremiah, a few times, and especially in Jeremiah 30, we can see that there will never be an individual not available to sit on the throne of David. We can't go through all of the scriptures today, and a lot of the material that I'm covering you can actually see in a booklet that has been named basically the same for the last few decades, probably all the way back to the 1950s, 1960s, anyway, where you have the United States and British Commonwealth and Prophecy. Not quite exactly the booklet that we have in the Church of God, but basically the same. But let's go to Jeremiah 22 and see, after the time that David actually died, after the time of Solomon, we come to Jeremiah, who's very important in the discussion of the throne of David, because we realize that he was very instrumental in making sure that the prophecy that God said would never fail, and that is that there would always be someone to sit on the throne of David. Jeremiah was very instrumental in all of that. So, and I talk and I just keep turning in the Bible to this place. Isaiah, Jeremiah 22. How's that? Jeremiah 22. And this will be in verse 2. Verse 2, and say, hear the word of the Lord, O King of Judah, you who sit on the throne of David. Now that statement is not unique to Jeremiah 22 and verse 2. That statement continues in Jeremiah 23. It continues in Jeremiah 29. You take a look at the kings who were the kings of Judah, and basically you see that statement. Kings who sit on the throne of Judah. And what is very interesting is Jeremiah 30. If we go there a few chapters ahead, Jeremiah 30, verses 7 through 9. And notice how this is talking in the future. It is not talking just about Rehoboam, Ahaz, Athaliah was there, Amaziah, her son, Athaliah, remember, killed him. Joash, who came along. And then you just, Marion and I, for some reason, started thinking, well, maybe we should memorize all the kings of Judah. And you can do that. There were 20 kings of Judah and 20 kings of Israel. Israel went into captivity many years before Judah. Their terms in office did not last as long. You find overall the kings of Judah lasted a lot longer. And of course you have the statements by God that basically the house of Judah should have learned the lessons from the house of Israel. That was the one started by Jeroboam. And Jeroboam is often mentioned not in a good light, but it's like there's never been someone so bad as Jeroboam. Ahab was in that line, was not in the line of the Judah, but what we do find is God saying, you know, Israel was bad and Judah, her sister, is even worse. And so you follow that and you come down to the time of Zedekiah and his sons dying. We'll come to that a little bit later. But you do see in Jeremiah 30 and verse 7 the following, alas, for that day is great, so that none is like it. It is the time of Jacob's trouble. What we're looking at here, brethren, is not one of the kings before Zedekiah sitting on the throne of David, because that's what they did. But we're looking way down the line to a period of time that we have not experienced yet. The worst time for Jacob ever. Sons, we're talking about the sons of Jacob, all of the children of Israel. And that would be the Canadians, the Australians, you name it. The major kids and where they ended up. This would be Ireland, Manasseh, of course, and Ephraim, the two sons of Joseph. You get into the Dutch, you get into the Norwegians and the Swedes, the Swiss, you know, all of the sons that have come from the descendants of those, or the nations that have come from those sons. So we come to the time of Jacob's trouble. Verse 8, it shall come in that day, says the Lord of hosts, that I will break his yoke from your neck and will burst your bonds. Foreigners shall no more enslave them, because there will be a time of slavery at the end time. But they shall serve the Lord their God, and David will be their king, whom I will raise up for them. So there is going to be a time, and we realize reading on here in a few moments that there's someone very important that will sit on the throne of David. And sometimes, well, in the world, can you imagine people thinking with the death of Queen Elizabeth II that Jesus Christ is going to be coming and taking over that throne, sitting on that throne? How many in the world, how many people on the street, if you just walked up to them and said, well, the Queen's following a long heritage of individuals who sit on that throne, it existed throughout the 18th century, the 19th century, 20th century, when all of these other kingdoms have failed, the ones that had kings. It's been established, and it's there right until now, and they've never gotten rid of, in England, their monarchy. It is still there. So what do you think is so important, if you ask someone on the street, what is so important about the Queen dying, and why do you think there still should be a monarch in England? That question has been asked, I think, of the British, and they, I believe over 52% still want a queen or a king in this place. By the way, with the death of the queen, there's already been changes, brethren, even in the song that they sing. They've already changed the words. It's not God bless our king, queen, that is, it's God bless our king. So just thought maybe you would keep you alert here and see if you knew that. But definitely the currency is going to change, and in England it's going to be King Charles III. The first King Charles, by the way, was beheaded. I don't know if you read that. And I think the second king was fine, although he went in, he was gone for about 10 years to escape the attitude, the anger against the monarchy or king himself. And then he came back, and I think he existed and died a natural death. But here we have then that period of time in the future where you have Jacob's trouble. So you know that David is going to sit on the throne. And even more so, you have longer than that in Isaiah 9, verses 6 through 7. Isaiah chapter 9, verses 6 through 7. Here you have a prophecy that has been fulfilled. Isaiah chapter 9, it's one of those Feast of Tabernacles sermons. Verses 6 through 7, Isaiah 9, 6 through 7, maybe one of those verses for not necessarily a sermon, but at least that could be included in a sermon. Unto us a child is born, verse 6 of chapter 9. Unto us a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulder. It's a prophecy, of course. And his name will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. And we might think, well, wait a minute, how can you have everlasting Father? This supports the Trinity, doesn't it? And the answer is, it's the everlasting beginner of the plan of God. He's a father. He's a starter of the plan of God the Father. So It is not talking about a Trinity here, because some people might think that. He's the Prince of Peace. It is Jesus Christ. Of the increase of his government and peace, there will be no end. Upon the throne of David and over his kingdom, to order it, establish it with judgment, justice from that time forward, even forevermore, the zeal of the Lord of hosts will perform this. So we see here that there has to be, and I'm starting with these scriptures because when we get into what happened with the throne of David, we right up to Queen Elizabeth, we have to realize that when it says this, there has to be an existing throne. So we go to the throne of David, we go to the fact that Jesus Christ is going to take that throne and sit on it, so you know it has to be there. And then, of course, in Luke 1 and verse 32, we could turn to that later, I suppose, but it's talking about the birth of Jesus Christ, when he was born, that prophecy in Isaiah being fulfilled. So we have then a scepter promise here, and the question is, was that fulfilled by the time of Solomon? Because some out there think that with the ending of Solomon, with the death of Solomon, that the prophecies of the throne of David are fulfilled. Now, they should know better, but people do not like to believe the law of God, the prophecies of God. They don't want to see that. What percentage of people don't even believe in God anymore? The percentage is growing. Maybe it's up to 44% that I saw in some article the other day that don't even believe in God. Definitely, if that's not the case, we know that all Christians, most nominal Christians, don't believe in the laws of God. They just don't. So we have then a line of David, beginning with David, that is an unbroken line of kings who will sit on his throne. And we're going to take a look at that today. To do that, we have to back up to Abraham. We'll cover that just a little bit. By the way, I heard in the opening prayer to help us to understand what is said in the prayer or in the sermon. So thank you very much. I hope I do get that help today. And if it's if it's really confusing, then we can blame it on your ears just not understanding it. But I don't think so. It's usually the speaker who has to be very clear, and I'll try to be clear today. But we are backing up to Abraham because a covenant started with Abraham that would be speaking of kings right to the end of time. And so we go to a couple of the scriptures in Genesis. Let's go to Genesis chapter 17 and verses 4 through 7. Genesis chapter 17 and verses 4 through 7. Now, for those of us who've been in the church a while, I think we remember the term race and grace. How many of you remember that back in the 60s, 70s, or even reading about it? And that tells you that you're almost 80 years old if you remember that. But it was mentioned quite often, and I'm kidding about that too, because the term has been used for a long time. So you could be 15, I suppose, and know that. But Genesis 17 comes back to that. And I mention race and grace because that starts with Abraham. Race meaning that there will be blessings through a tribe of people, Jacob in this case. There will be blessings through Abraham's descendants, Abraham, Isaac, and then Jacob, and then his kids, and then one of his kids especially, and two of those kids from that kid, definitely there would be a tremendous blessing. So we have that, and that would be the race that we talk about, the blessings from Abraham on, where you have a fulfillment up to the time of Daniel. For the most part, an unbroken blessing all through the time that Daniel speaks of, let's put it that way, until the times of the Gentiles. So when you have Babylon coming along, we think of the times of the Gentiles starting. So you see that term, times of Gentiles, It is talking about the four major Gentile kingdoms that rule over the earth, where Jerusalem has been captured by Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylon. And so you have then, from that time on, Israel kind of goes into demise, and then comes out of that, and we hear of the blessing after being cursed for years and years. You have finally the blessing of about 1800 with England, and for a short time then, it would be approximately the 1800s, the 1900s, and then into a little bit maybe of the 21st century. But it'd be a short time where you have also Israel coming back, being blessed to fulfill God's plan. But then the times of the Gentiles really still exist, because until you have Luke 21, you don't have until the times of the Gentiles finished. And that's when Jerusalem is taken captive, Christ returns and ends the time of the Gentiles and establishes Israel, only in this case a very expanded Israel, because everybody is going to become a Jew, right? So it's pretty Israeli when everybody comes a Jew. So I kind of give you that overall understanding so that we realize what's taking place here. So you definitely have blessings for thousands of years up to the time of David for sure. And beyond, where you have this blessing, this covenant with Abraham that comes true. And the covenant of grace, by the way, is fulfilled in about 31 AD, when Jesus Christ dies and is established and is proven as the Savior, the Messiah, because it would be the resurrection that proves we now have a Savior. 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. Remember, if you want a sign that I am the Messiah, the Son of God, Son of Man, then I'll be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. So 31 AD, the resurrection of Christ. Now you have Christ as the head of the church. And a false prophet comes along, because there's going to be a man established and has been established for a long time who is in the place of Christ. Remember, you can kind of pick who that is. I could say it, but I think I'll be arrested if I keep saying that into the next 22nd century. I'm not going to live that long. But whatever the case, we realize that there is a head of state, the beast, and the head of the church, the false prophet, at the end time, that are going to be replaced. But all this starts with Abraham, and you have then in Genesis 17, here it says, "As for me," starting out in verse 7, 4 that is, "As for me, behold, my covenant is with you, and you shall be a father of many nations. Neither shall your name any more be called Abram, but your name shall be called Abraham, for a father of many nations have I made you, and I will make you exceedingly fruitful. I will make nations of you, and kings shall come out of you." And now we find that the kings coming out will be, well, many kings of Israel, but the main emphasis is going to be that we find in Genesis 49 that the kings will be from the tribe of Juba. How's that? That's even better. Talking about frozen, I think my tongue is frozen. But we find then in so many countries, even during the time of World War II, before it, 1918, where you had the Bolshevik Revolution, you have the cousin of the King of England who wants to come over and be protected, because the Jews are ruling over so many of these nations. And the prophecy was that the scepter belongs to the tribe of Judah. So you see that throughout history. Even Philip came from a Greek family, and they were Jews, of course. And by the way, he was a distant cousin of his wife, Elizabeth, that is, Philip was, through all the way back to, I think it was Victoria's daughter. And you see, they were related. So you have, again, the scepter with Judah, and even Philip, who they didn't want to make a king because he was German. So after the war, who's going to say, yes, Philip can also be a king? You know, you have a king and queen, and he could have been king, but he wouldn't be in charge, of course. He wouldn't be the one that is sitting on the throne. It would be Queen Elizabeth. But if she died, then he would not have taken over. You see kings dying. You see Queen Victoria, for example. If she died, if her husband would have outlived her, he would not have been king. It would have been another line. As far as I know, I think that's the way it is. You can talk to Lynn. She's Australian and British, so she would know even better than I. So you have this prophecy then that is telling us that through Abraham, you're going to have nations and you're going to have kings. The same thing is in Genesis 35, where you could read the same thing, a company of nations and kings. And I won't go there. Genesis 48, the same thing, where you have the blessings that are handed down, and you come to Ephraim and Manasseh, for example, and the blessings that come through them. So we have all of these scriptures, and like I said, a lot of these scriptures would be in the booklets that we have. But now the question is, while ancient Israel saw the fulfillment of these prophecies, or a lot of these prophecies to Solomon, did Solomon's reign fulfill all of the prophecies that are given in the covenant of Abraham? And the answer is no. And here are some of the points that you might want to think of. Abraham was to be the father of many nations. Israel was only one nation. So it couldn't end there. Secondly, God told Abraham that his descendants would be as the stars of heaven and as the sand of the sea. Solomon's kingdom was only a small type. If you just count the numbers, in fact, you can see that in the book of Chronicles, you would see the numbering. In fact, there's a book called Numbers where they started numbering how many were in each tribe. And so you can know, in fact, up to David's time, he had Israel numbered and got in a lot of trouble over it. Of course, he was numbering the army, but still he was numbering men. But it wouldn't be the sand of the sea. That, by the way, is not a exact number. It's meaning a lot. You can't number them. So it would be a time then fulfilling Abraham's covenant where there'd be so many people coming from Abraham that you just can't count them all. And then what we have is Abraham's descendants were to possess the gate of their enemies during Solomon's time. That never happened. The Straits of Gibraltar, for example, and, you know, all of the others, I think, down in the southern part of South Africa, there's the horn down there, and that didn't exist at the time as a horn of the enemies, so you have all of these gates of the enemies that would be possessed, and that did not happen during Solomon's time. And then you have a nation and a company of nations. You don't find that during the time of Solomon at all. You do find a nation and a company of nations with the prophecy of Genesis 48, when you have, or in 35 and 48, you have the crossing of the hands of Jacob on his grandchildren, and Joseph saying, no, you're crossing your hands, you shouldn't do that, you've got the wrong blessing on the wrong kid, or the right blessing on the wrong kid, better yet. And so that didn't happen because you had to have Joseph and then his two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, and Ephraim was the younger child. By the way, if you look at the English, and they tend to be a little bit stiff in what they do, but if you go to their Congress, so to speak, their parliament, the youth comes out, just the way they do, they're bantering back and forth like two young kids, you know, the younger children. Manasseh is the oldest. But Manasseh doesn't get the big blessing of a multitude of nations. Ephraim does. Okay, so then the prophecies in Genesis 49, where it describes Joseph's descendants as surpassing the other tribes. You don't have that in Solomon's reign. So if these prophecies were not fulfilled in ancient time, there's only one possibility you can come up with a second, and that is it's a hyperbole, but that's not the case. A lot of people will say that's, you know, just it's not exact. It's not, you know, telling you the way it specifically is going to be. You just kind of have to generalize some of these things. But basically, what we have is David's throne is going to last all the way till the coming of Jesus Christ. It's going to be that way. And Genesis indicates, all the way back to Genesis 41, 49, that is, that these prophecies are only going to be fulfilled in the last days. Genesis 49, 1. These prophecies are for the last days. Okay, so we go on to David's throne and prophecy. We're going to continue from there. And again, this is kind of a reminder for some of us. But we see in the line of David, just the prophetic line of David, we see what happens. Even Sarah, by the way, kings of people shall be from her. So it's not only from Abraham, but also talking about Abraham's wife. Let's go to 2 Samuel 7, verses 12 through 16. 2 Samuel chapter 7, and start out in verse 12. 2 Samuel 7 and verse 12. When your days are fulfilled, this is David's days, and you rest with your fathers, I will set up your seed after you, who will come from your body. He shall build a house for my name. This is Solomon specifically that he's talking about. And I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. I'll be his father. He'll be my son. If he commits iniquity, I will chasten him with the rod of men and with the blows of the son of men. But my mercy shall not depart from him, as I took it from Saul. So Saul, his kids did not, you know, have any kids on the throne. It stopped. It went to Judah. It went to David. Samuel was not a Jew, as far as I remember. Wasn't he a Benjaminite? So a Norwegian was not going to be in charge. There'd be too much Lefse, too much Lutefisk, and these would be Vikings that just couldn't do it. But it would be... It would be through David. Notice he goes on to say, my mercy shall not depart from me as I took it from Saul, whom I removed from before you, and your house and your kingdom shall be established forever before you. Your throne shall be established forever. Same thing that was said of David. So we have then David's dynasty would continue through his son, and the dynasty that would continue, emphasized three different times in the Bible, would continue forever. And then if kings rebelled, they'd be punished, but they would still have descendants sitting on the throne. So let's go to Luke 1, verses 31 through 33. Actually, Psalm 89, 4. Let's choose that scripture because there's so many. Before the queen died, I was reading a psalm, I think it was Psalm 84, and it was a psalm where David was saying, you know, you promised this, you've been so kind, you've been so good, and then he says about two-thirds of the way through, and maybe it was Psalm 85 or 86, but he said, well, why have you turned on me? You promised that my throne would exist forever, but you're not treating me that well. And then, of course, David turns and David praises God. But here's Psalm 89. It says, and in verse 4, by the way, I talked to Mr. Neff on Friday morning, and he, of course, he gave the sermon this morning up in Johnstown. And he said, well, I think I'm going to give a sermon on something having to do with the queen, and he may have said the throne of David, I don't know. I didn't know the queen had died at that time. And so later on in the morning, I saw that the queen had died, and I thought, Mr. Neff's going to give a sermon on that subject because the queen died. So I suspect he's going to be using some of my scriptures. but whatever the case, I'm pretty sure that he is giving one concerning the queen, and no doubt that Jesus Christ is going to sit on the throne of David. So in Psalm 89 and verse 4, we have, one page back here, Psalm 89 and verse 4, your seed I will establish forever and build up your throne to all generations. I bring that up because we just showed that throughout the Bible, this is just common. It is not something that is unique where you find it one, two, or three or four times. It is just all the way through the Bible, the sequence all the way up to the time of Jesus Christ, of events, and the prophecies talk about sitting on the throne of David. So we recognize that, we know that. Luke 1, I'll come back to that later, but we realize that even in the chronological sequence, when it talks about who's from whom, you know, you go through starting way back when, and maybe with Boaz, and moving forward, and even before that, after that, David, and moving forward, I guess we would say. And you see the line that is talking about the existence of this throne. So we have then Solomon leading Israel. Then we have Jeroboam is the king of the north. And Rehoboam is the king of the, did I say king of the north? That's wrong. The Daniel, by the way. You can skip to Daniel on that one. The king of Israel. And then you have Rehoboam, the king of Judah. You can follow the story down. I don't want to do it myself, but we find then Zedekiah being the very last king of Judah. And we realize that he was taken into captivity. His sons were all executed. His sons were all executed. Now, some people say, well, see, there's not going to be another son who can take the throne. So it ends right there. And if you do not believe the Bible, or if you want to mock the prophecies of God, you can say, no, no sons existed. No sons existed. They were all executed. And then, of course, after that, Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon was a very cruel king, and he wanted to make sure that Zedekiah saw that, where his sons are executed, and then his eyes were put out, and he died in captivity. So people say, the scepter does depart from Judah. Nebuchadnezzar may have known about what the Jews taught concerning a coming Savior. He may have known that because he had theologians in his group. They weren't Christians, of course, or believers in God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But definitely he could have known this, and he wanted to get rid of that line, because Satan is involved with the kings of the earth. And if he didn't know that, then he was inspired by Satan the devil to make sure that there was no line as far as he was concerned. No line of David existing. And we'll fast forward a little bit because we realize what took place at the beginning of World War II, where you had King Edward VIII. This would be the uncle of Queen Elizabeth, where we realize that he was a Nazi sympathizer. And you see pictures of him. If you've seen any documentaries at all, you realize that he fell for a woman rather than being king, not king of a country, but king of a commonwealth, king of a kingdom that existed, where the sun did not set, as the term goes. He gave it all up for a woman. Now, who do you think did that? Do you think that God wanted a man in there who was going to sympathize and give Britain away? Remember, Hitler sent an emissary over to, or a diplomat over to talk to the king, or at least Churchill, maybe both, and to say, look, if you'll just be at peace with us, if you won't fight us, then Hitler is not going to come in. We're not going to come in. We'll not destroy anybody. Hitler did not want to destroy. In fact, he didn't want to bomb London at all. What happened with that, if you've read the story, is that a German bomber came over and accidentally bombed London. And what are the British going to do? Well, they're going to send a bomber over and bomb Berlin. So there you go. And so what does Hitler do now? They bomb Berlin. Well, I'm going to take out London. We'll start bombing London. So it's God's nature, you know, human nature, and things like that happen. But if you had Edward, king, and he was king from January through about the middle of December, for about 11 months, if you had him accepting the, saying, look, I'll get rid of Wally, and I'll be the king. I can always have an affair with her, you know, who knows what they would say, carnally speaking, but that was not the way it was going to happen. And what do you think got in the way? What do you think happened? Do you think God did this, or it was just kind of a historical fact, and it just happened, you know, no significance to it at all. God is not involved. And the answer is God was very much involved. And we might say, oh, what went through his mind? You know, it's this guy is crazy, and people probably were saying all types of things about their beloved Edward because they liked him. He had charisma. Elizabeth's father did not. He stuttered. Remember the King's Speech? If any of you have seen that film? How many saw that? King's Speech. Oh, if you haven't, I would recommend it. Not for some of the language, because when he got really angry, he could spit out a lot of words without stuttering. But so you want to just block those things out. But whatever the case, it is, it's historical. And it shows God's involvement to us, because you have a Winston Churchill who was put there by God. A lot of these individuals, and some may say, well, you know, Queen Elizabeth is worth a lot too much money. She's, you know, she has quite a few million dollars. And you can say, no, you shouldn't have a monarch. No monarch should be worth that much money. But King David was very rich. King David, with what he gave to the building of the temple, he was very, very rich. So we take a look at these things. We look at it from a human perspective sometimes, and we're way off. We just don't think the way God thinks. He's going to be doing things. He sets up kings. He sets up governments. He's the one who does that. I don't know why God didn't like Boris over in England. Was that his name? The prime minister. But we know God is involved in all of this and has the plan worked out. Well, we come to the sons of Zedekiah dying, and seemingly there is no descendant sit on the throne. And some have said, if there's not a son, then you cannot have a daughter, because this is what happened. There's Jeremiah's story about two daughters. And some say, forgetting that in the Bible, there was a decision made that if there are no sons, the inheritance goes to the daughters. In fact, it was in with Moses, remember, or maybe it was Joshua, when they were going into the promised land, there's no guys, to take the inheritance. And we find that absolutely, the inheritance was given to the daughters. So it's descendants. When God says sons, God thinks in different ways than we do, and it just means children, sons, the sons of God. Okay. You women are not sons of God. You will not be in the kingdom. Men will always be over you. You will always be physical. Don't forget that. No, God is not that way. He's giving an inheritance to sons and daughters, even though he uses the term sons. Sons, you will be my sons. Galatians 4, better yet, where we are a son like Jesus Christ, and women are, in that way, sons, so that they can get the inheritance. The inheritance goes to one, Jesus Christ. So you women have to have the spirit of Jesus Christ, but it's called a son. Okay, so you have in Jeremiah then, 33, where God says, my covenant also will be not broken with David my servant. Okay, you don't want that covenant broken, and that is the covenant God established with David. So how is God going to fulfill it? He's going to fulfill it through the king's daughters. We can go to Jeremiah 41 with the captivity. And this is at the time that Jerusalem falls, that Nebuchadnezzar takes over. And there is a man by the name of Gedaliah who was assassinated by a man named Ishmael. And Ishmael then carries them all away captive. And he takes the king's daughters with them. This is Jeremiah chapter 41, verse 10. I won't continue too much with this, but I'll be just mentioning some scriptures just to let you know that the two daughters are going to end up in Egypt, where the story ends. And then we find in Irish history, Irish legend, we find that a guy named Baruch was over there. The Hebrew name is very close. And we find that there's a daughter or two that would be fulfilling a prophecy in Ezekiel that some don't understand. But let's go to Jeremiah 41 for a moment. Jeremiah 41 in verse 10. Ishmael carried away captive all the rest of the people who were in Mizpah. And this is very important to understand. The king's daughters and all the people who remained in Mizpah. Specifically mentioned the king's daughters. And so the Bible is God-breathed. Every word of the Bible is God-breathed. And there's not just something there for no reason at all. It wants to let us know that Nebuchadnezzar did not kill those daughters, that you have the daughters of Zedekiah. And you can go through chapter 42 and chapter 43, and you can see where they ended up in Egypt. And another verse in Jeremiah where it says, see this day I've set over you the nations. This would be in chapter 1 of Jeremiah, where this was the mission, you might say, to Jeremiah. I have set before you the nations and to be over the kingdoms, to root out, to pull down, to destroy, to throw down, to build, and to plant. So I'm not going to go into the details on that, except to say when God called Jeremiah, this is what he was going to do. He was going to fulfill that prophecy where God would actually take out the sons and reestablish and plant, actually, line of David over in Ireland, England, Scotland. How many of you saw the movie where the throne of Scone is actually captured by some in, was it Scotland? They came down and they stole it and took it up there and the police went like this, bad boy, because the police in Scotland thought, yeah, the English shouldn't have that throne. And I think it's gone back and forth now. We saw it. I think the actual throne of coronation was being repaired at the time we were over there. That was in about 2010, I think, when we saw that. But I believe it goes back and forth. The jewels, the crown jewels, are in Scotland and in England both, I believe now. So they made a deal because they didn't want any more Scotsmen coming down stealing things, which they would do. Okay, so let's go on then to kind of the end of the story. And just to say that there are quite a few clues, and what you have, and these are just some major points that we'll look at, indicating strongly, if not 99% sure, that the throne of David is in England. The coat of arms of the British family, for one thing, is filled with symbols connecting with the Davidic monarchy. The coat of arms has multiple lions. So you have Judah's tribal symbol, which was the lion. You have a harp there, and I think that has to do with Ireland also. And Guinness, I believe. How many of you don't like Guinness? You're not going to be a king if you don't like Guinness. Okay, but anyway, I think that's the harp on Guinness, on the Ireland. Then you have not only the lion, but as I mentioned, you have the harp. Then the coronation ceremony itself is based on the coronation ceremonies for King David and King Solomon, the rituals that exist with the anointing oil. Now, how many kings are anointed with oil? Was President Biden anointed with oil? Was President Trump anointed with oil? I mean, he would be the God's man, right? And I do like, you know, make America great again. But you know why President Trump could not make America great again? Because blessings come through obedience. All we have to do is read Deuteronomy 28, and we will know that America cannot be blessed. President Trump was going to fail. As much as he wanted this nation to be great, it was not going to be great. So it just absolutely cannot be done, so don't vote for him again. I don't know that that's going to happen, but that is a major, that God is the one who sets up kings, and he did set up President Trump. He was put in office by God. President Biden was put in office by God, and it's either for worse or for better. It's either for mercy or for judgment. It's up to God what he's going to do. So we look at the end then, and we realize Luke 1:32. When Christ returns, what's going to happen? Luke 1 and verse 32. Here it says, the angel said to her, in verse 30, we'll come to there when we're talking, the angel is talking to Mary, do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God. And behold, you will conceive in your womb and bring forth a son and shall call his name Jesus. He will be great. He will be called the Son of the Highest. And the Lord God will give him the throne of his father David. It exists to this day. There is just no question about it. When Christ returns, that's going to happen. So we have, and I'm going to play this for you in a moment, but it's interesting thinking about where the throne of David is. When you stop to think about a national anthem, we could call it the United Kingdom's national anthem is now God Save the King. That's for the United Kingdom. England does not have a national anthem. Did you know that? But it has two. When the Queen shows up, there's two anthems that are played. Two. Can you guess what the other one is? When you have the Commonwealth Games, for example, what do you have played for the national anthem, so to speak? You know, Olympics, we win, an American stands, the first one, and you play the national anthem. If it's Russian, you play the national anthem. So what do they do with England at the Commonwealth Games when England wins? They don't play God Save the Queen or the King. There's another song. How many of you saw Chariots of Fire? You'll never be in the kingdom if you don't see Chariots of the Fire, for sure. It's for runners, and it's for people who like challenges. So you've got to see it. But it is good. At the end of that movie, there's a song called Jerusalem. Jerusalem. Now, there's a little history behind that song, but I'll just let you know that soccer games, rugby games, and when in the Commonwealth Games, when England wins, they play Jerusalem. They don't play God Save the King. Now, what's so interesting about that is probably most people who stand and sing it. You see these crowds of thousands in rugby games standing up, and then you have someone vocalizing. Westerna, is that her name? It's one of the singers, I think, in Australia and New Zealand, whatever. And she's singing Jerusalem. And the whole crowd is singing Jerusalem. It's like, you know, I hear that. It's like, well, do they know what they're singing? You know, we stand, we sing the national anthem. And we all know it, you know, the ramparts. And it's our national anthem. And everybody sings that one. By the way, years ago, when at 12 midnight or 11 o'clock, all TV stations went off, you know what we sang at the end of it? It was the national anthem. I still remember that. And somewhere along the line, we stopped singing the national anthem. Well, here are the lyrics to Jerusalem. And did those feet in ancient time, it's talking about Jesus Christ, when they sing this, do they know that? Did those feet in ancient times walk upon England's mountain greens, and was the Holy Lamb of God on England's pleasant pastures seen? And did the countenance divine shine forth upon our clouded hills, and was Jerusalem builded here among these dark satanic mills? Bring me my bow of burning gold, bring me my arrows of desire, bring me my spear, O clouds unfold, bring me my chariot of fire. I will not cease from mental fight, nor shall my sword sleep in my hand till we have built Jerusalem in England's green and pleasant land. Do you think Jerusalem is going to be built there? Well, if it extends out, this is what they sing for the national anthem. 52% of the Englishmen, not saying, you know, the Commonwealth as a whole, but 52% of the English want this as their national anthem. They don't have one, but they sing both. When the king appears, it's God Save the Queen, and then I think Jerusalem is first. But what do we have? Let me just forward this, and I'm going to have a YouTube, if we can show that, of this played, just to show you what is played, and also how that fits in with till we built Jerusalem in England's green and pleasant land, and how this prophecy is going to come true. I'll just mention there's going to be the time of trouble, and the British Empire is going to be pretty much in fragments, as will the government of the United States and all of the sons of Jacob's kingdoms. They'll be fragmented. And I don't know if the king is going to be to die then. I'm not sure what's going to happen to the king, but King Charles now is sitting on Britain's throne. More so than Britain. He is sitting on the throne. We find, though, that Christ destroys all governments. We know that from Daniel. All governments will be destroyed. And we also know Christ is not going to return to England. He's going to return to the Mount of Olives, okay? I don't know if he's going to sweep by England and wave, but I think there's going to be something else on his mind, and that is the setting up of the kingdom of God. And all of the saints will be coming with him. As we know, and he wars and he makes judgment, doesn't he? So who will be the last physical king on David's throne? We don't know. He could die in the time of Jacob's trouble, but we know that whoever's sitting on the throne, they will give that throne over to Jesus Christ. It will be Jesus Christ. And we can realize that we do have now a head of the church, and that is head of the church, the spiritual head that should be the spiritual head over the entire earth is Jesus Christ. He's coming back, but you know, he has not been sitting on the throne as head of state. That is not going to take place until he returns where he sits on the throne of David. And now he's not only the head of the church, replacing the false prophet, but he's also going to be head of state, replacing the beast at the end time. Satan is always going to have, you know, mimicking what he's doing. He's always going to have something in the place of the reality to fool people. So we look forward to that, Christ being the head of the church and Christ being the head of state in Jerusalem on the Mount of Olives, where he returns over the whole world. So with that, I'm going to have the YouTube played. Maybe we can cut the lights. I guess we'll need to. And we'll see that even though the English thinks it's going to be built in Jerusalem, in England, the throne, it's not going to happen that way. But I think it'd be good for all of us to realize that there is a song out there in the land where you have the throne of David established in England. There is that song that could be the national anthem. And what they're singing, it is about the return of Jesus Christ, even though in the wrong place. And we can hit the lights.